Technology has made the world a smaller place, but there is still so much we do not know. Every week, Postcards takes you on a trip of exploration and discovery. From a small village in Afghanistan to a protected cultural heritage site in South America. From Africa's amazing natural landscapes to the most advanced tech displays in the world. Postcards, where you meet the world without actually taking a trip. Postcards.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn.
Lifeguards are now on duty on some of Cambodia's busiest beaches to prevent frequent drownings of locals and tourists. Cambodia has one of the highest rates of drownings in Southeast Asia, with an average of around 6 people dying daily, mostly children. Here's Shane Bigham with this postcard from Cambodia.
Standing out in bright orange t-shirts and shorts, these men are members of Cambodia's new 30-strong lifeguard team. Put together last September, after 10 locals and foreign tourists drowned in the first 8 months of the year, the lifeguards patrol the five busiest beaches in Sihanoukville, a popular tourist destination on the south coast. At least three lifeguards employed by the provincial government patrol each beach during peak periods when people flee the sweltering cities for the coast. Head lifeguard Fan Faneth says that dangerous sea conditions off Sihanoukville, combined with swimmers getting drunk, are the main causes of drownings here.
The most dangerous things in this area are firstly the rough seas, which are common here. Secondly, many of the tourists drink alcohol and they get drunk before going into the water, which leads to many accidents. Thirdly, few people wear life jackets, which is especially dangerous if you can't swim.
Sen Anakan is a swimming instructor at the ICANN British International School in Phnom Penh and a volunteer with the charity Swim, which teaches poor children in the villages how to swim.
Most of the people who drown in Cambodia are children because they cannot swim and their parents just let them go off unsupervised. They don't teach the children how to swim at school, and when they come home, their parents often let them go out to play with their friends, and as a result, they are more likely to be exposed to the danger of drowning.
The most recent study on drowning in Cambodia was done back in 2007 and included more than 240,000 households in 22 provinces. There's little reason to suspect that things have improved much. The Cambodian Accident and Injury Survey found that more than 2,000 children drown here each year, about six a day on average, which is 10 times the rate in richer nations. Drowning, it said, is the leading cause of child deaths, while 95% of victims over the age of four never learned how to swim. The waters around Sihanoukville are particularly treacherous, with tropical storms blowing in from the Gulf of Thailand and powerful underwater rip currents, which can drag even strong swimmers out to sea. To counter the threat, lifeguards have posted yellow flags in safe swimming areas and blue flags in known danger spots. Several watchtowers have also been constructed, giving them a bird's-eye view of swimmers below.
My message to all the visitors who come here, both locals and foreigners, is to enjoy the beaches and not worry about coming to Cambodia. Don't worry about drowning. If your children are playing in the water, you needn't worry anymore because our lifeguards are here to keep an eye on them. They should come and enjoy the water, and they should be safe too. With our lifeguards here, everything will be fine.
With just 3 days of official training under their belts, the lifeguards train themselves to sharpen their life-saving skills. They train to rescue people from drowning by practicing on each other, taking turns to play the victim. Less than 10% of drowning victims in Cambodia receive resuscitation from a trained responder, while 40% receive no resuscitation at all, according to the Cambodian Accident and Injury Survey. So, Vaisal is a lifeguard.
I really love this job, protecting the beaches and taking care of all the tourists. I feel really responsible for them. I'm proud that a lot of people come to this part of Cambodia to enjoy our beautiful beaches, which are the best in the kingdom. I feel really suited to this job because I know how to swim very well, and we had professional training from an expert who came from Thailand.
While visitors to Sihanoukville's beaches are safer today than in the past, experts say many more lifeguards are needed to properly cover all the beaches. The lifeguards say they lack vital life-saving equipment such as two-way radios, jet skis, and speedboats.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn.
Special dance classes in Italy are helping mothers and babies bond by keeping them attached to one another during exercise. The practice, known as baby-wearing dancing, helps both mom and baby release and share feel-good hormones. Here's Bob Jones with this postcard from Italy.
Dance teacher Elena Alessandra Zou is getting ready for her weekly class in Asti, a small city in northwestern Italy. With her long hair pulled back, Zou puts her ballet shoes on and carefully straps her daughter Dorothea to her chest with a fabric wrap. Baby-wearing dancing is an offshoot of the baby-wearing practice. It involves keeping a child close to an adult's body, generally a parent or a caregiver, with the help of a baby carrier. Zoe, who started to dance at the age of 5 and has been teaching it for 12 years, explains what the practice involves.
Danzare in fascia significa danzare col proprio piccolo portato, il proprio piccolo portato in maniera.
Baby wearing dancing means dancing while carrying one's own child in an ergonomic fashion. One can use not only wraps but also maitai, a type of baby carrier or ergonomic pouches. They are all supports that allow mothers to dance safely.
As the mothers practice their dance moves, their children are gently rocked and often fall asleep. Zoe's class, appropriately named Cuore a Cuore, or Heart to Heart in English, is one of several that have recently sprung up in Italy. They also exist around the world, from the United States to Romania, India and Australia. Its fans say its success is down to the special bond it helps develop between mother and baby. Zoe says that during her class, she sees mothers experiencing a whole range of raw feelings.
Io le vedo commuoversi, le vedo appassionarsi, le vedo luminose, le vedo vivere una quantità di cose.
I see them getting emotional, I see them passionate, I see them radiant, I see them experience a great variety of emotions. They themselves are amazed.
Antonella Genatiempo is a psychologist and founder of Scuola del Portare, or School of Carrying. Founded in 2006, Scuola del Portare is one of Italy's first schools for baby-wearing consultants. Genatiempo says baby-wearing dancing has unique benefits for both mother and baby.
Le neomamme, chi ha il primo figlio, vive in uno stato comunque assolutamente nuovo.
A new mother with her first child lives in a brand new emotional and psychological dimension. She feels especially lonely and isolated because of very strong hormonal changes happening to her body. Baby-wearing dancing allows her to get together with other mothers who share the same needs. But above all, through the evocative power of music and dance, the mother produces a series of hormones that are essential to her well-being. The hormones are then transmitted to her child. A happy mother who's wearing her child and who's dancing in a state of well-being passes this all to her own baby.
Heart to Heart's classes are twofold. They combined body expression with some modern dance moves. Other variations of baby-wearing dancing around the world include jazz, Oriental, Latin American, and belly dancing, to name just a few. But Zhou warns the dance moves need to be chosen carefully for the safety of the mother and child. Baby-wearing dancing shouldn't include moves such as jumps and pirouettes that could make mothers dizzy and cause them to fall over. She says a physiotherapist or obstetrician should approve the dance moves to make sure they're compatible with the mother's post-birth recovery. Many mothers who attend Zhou's class already practice baby-wearing. Student Egla Chiesa credits baby-wearing dancing with allowing her to strengthen her bond with her daughter Giada, who was born premature.
La danza è una mia passione e il fatto di condividerla con mia figlia è stato...
Dancing is a passion of mine and sharing it with my daughter is beautiful, something I've always wanted to do.
Another student, Sonia Profita, explains how baby-wearing dancing affects her.
Io sento i battiti suoi, lui sente i battiti miei. È una sensazione che a me emoziona ogni volta.
I feel his heartbeat, he feels my heartbeat. I'm moved every time I feel him so close. Every time I put him inside the wrap, it's incredible that no matter what discomfort the baby has, he comes down once he's inside the pouch.
Clinical psychologist Rita Corporali says there is a science to back up the physical and psychological benefits of baby-wearing dancing.
I benefici della baby-wearing dance li possiamo ritrovare anche...
We can find benefits for baby-wearing dancing also on a hormonal level. We know that by practicing sport, by moving, high levels of serotonin are produced, and serotonin is defined as the hormone of well-being. So through baby-wearing dancing, a mother's happiness is passed on to her child, is transferred to her baby. We can assume that through baby-wearing dancing, a child will develop a sense of well-being and will likely be a calmer baby, a child who will cry less.
By the end of Zoe's class, most babies are asleep, and the mums look so relaxed, they might be ready for a nap when they get home too.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn.
Beachgoers in South Australia have swapped surfboards for sand bikes for a classic motorcycle competition. More than 60 years after the last official speed trial at Adelaide's Salix Beach, the old-style bikes have come back to the sands. Here's Yang Yong with this postcard from Australia.
It's the first time motorbikes have been on these sands in six decades. The wet and windy weather kept swimmers and surfers away to allow the classic and vintage bikes to make a comeback for a special race. Between 1913 and 1953, beach racing was a regular event here. Nobody quite knows why it stopped, but 3 years ago some friends from the Levis Motorcycle Club decided to bring it back. Event organizer Peter Hennecombe.
This beach is made for this sort of event. It's because of the pebbles and the way the makeup of the beach and everything, and it's such an iconic event that people were dying to get here.
Competitors came from every state and territory, all with bikes made before 1963. With 50 events over 2 days, spectators were treated to some spectacular racing. Competitors completed laps of an 800-meter circuit, including a difficult turn at each end. Some needed help to get going, and there were a few breakdowns, but just about everyone found a way to finish. Here is one competitor who passed the checkered flag.
We're not sure what happened. Just going as hard as we could and as fast as we could and just had a big bang and pop, pop, pop.
Hen Autumn from Melbourne had the oldest bike built in 1924.
And because it's such a unique thing and it hasn't run for such a long time, we just wanted to be part of it. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. My kids will talk about it. You know, it's just fantastic.
Trevor Henderson is another competitor.
You can see by the people here and the enthusiasm they're showing that, you know, it's something a little different and people like that.
they won't be waiting 50 years to come back either. Event organizer Peter Hennekom says talks are already underway to race at Cilix Beach in 2019.
There'll be a lot of hosing off and washing of parts and bikes and getting them ready for the next one, because I'm sure they'll want to come again.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn.
Artists in New York are rescuing old vinyl records to create not only functional works of art, but also a greener environment. The decline of vinyl records began in the 1980s with the growing popularity of CDs. But they're now taking on a new life. Here's Ryan Price with this postcard from the United States.
Vinyl records are making a comeback. Well, sort of. Here at this busy workshop in Brooklyn, New York, vinyl is being spun into works of art. Artists are rescuing vinyl records from the trash, thereby not only creating functional works of art, but also helping the environment. Owner of WR Records by Monkey Patrick Chirico gets his raw materials from the surplus of used record stores. The stores canvas flea markets and estate sales, then sell the most popular vinyl and discard the rest. Chirico says he pays around 10 cents a disc and uses mostly 33 LPs, separating them into thick and thin vinyls.
Pretty much we only use 33 LPs for everything we do. When the record comes in, we actually take it out of its record cover, take the paper out, organize that, and then we take the record itself and organize it into thick and thin vinyl. One of our main goals is to utilize all the vinyl. As you know, in Brooklyn, throwing away your garbage is very expensive. So, you know, if we're left with a heavyweight record, a piece of record cover, you know, our goal is to figure out how to maximize it and to make it into another usable item.
As for the art, Chirico says it's all about the label, not the artist. He consistently picks the Michael Jackson's Thrillers and Frank Sinatra, but it's the record labels that appeal to the true music fans.
You know, where I'll get a Michael Jackson Thriller album every week sometimes, you know? I get more Frank Sinatra than I know what to do with. But if I was looking for a Beatles album, that's still pretty impossible. You're not going to get a Beatles, you're not going to get the Grateful Dead, you're not going to get anything from the 90s and up, unless it's hip-hop. We try to use like Columbia, Atlantic, Warner Brothers, Interscope, Def Jam, you know, all these record labels that any person that grew up from the 70s to the 90s sort of relates to it. You know, we're really relating to a rock and roll nostalgic customer or a hip-hop nostalgic customer.
Environmentalists applaud the repurposing of vinyl records. Eric Goldstein is from the Natural Resources Defense Council.
Probably the worst thing we could do with our old vinyl records is to discard them in landfills. But it is made of polyvinyl chloride, which is a particular problem when it ends up in landfills. It doesn't biodegrade. It can stay in a landfill for hundreds, if not 1,000 years. It can contaminate groundwater should it break apart. And most importantly, there are productive uses for these products.
To reduce his carbon footprint, Chirico says he uses 90% of every record. He makes album covers into smartphone speaker stands, and the paper sleeves inside are used for shipping and packaging.
The thick vinyl we use for clocks and wall art and things that don't need to be manipulated. And for the thinner vinyl, we use for laser cutting and bracelet making.
Vinyl art advocates say it's meant to encourage people to slow down, switch off their smartphones, and really enjoy every aspect of music again.
This product that you either have on your arm or in your pocket or on your wall has already had dozens of people sitting around it and slowing down and enjoying it in a whole nother pastime. I'm just giving that same music lover another way to, like, enjoy the music.
The decline of vinyl records started in the 80s, first with cassettes, which were then surpassed by CDs, MP3s, and later digital downloads. Trico admits not all records are created equal.
If I get a Beatles album, that's going home to my wife. You know what I mean? I'm not going to go and cut a Beatles, unless it's really bad and, like, kids scratched it out.
Hello and welcome to Postcards, a show which takes you across borders without actually leaving home. I'm Wen Jie. On the banks of the river Volga, Russians are racing to catch as much fish as possible. The fishing is part of an annual festival which attracts people from all over the country. Before we come to the end of today's show, I would like to share with you an extra postcard from Russia. From far and wide, amateur anglers are arriving at Chkalovsk in Nizhny Novgorod region for the fishing festival. It's estimated there are 1,000 of them here. But fishing here is hard work. The fish lie under several feet of ice, and before they can do anything else, the fishermen have to manually drill their way through to the water below. This bleak ice landscape is the frozen water of Sannakta River. Everyone has their own ideas about the best way to catch fish, and Sergei Startsev likes to start with a nip of vodka. It's not just for himself. Startsev also pours a little down his fish hole and says,
otherwise, fish won't bite. First of all, this is for the host.
After pouring a cap of vodka into the frozen water, Startsev has a drink himself.
So everything will go smoothly.
Valery Shentsov is the governor of the Nizhny Novgorod region. He's scornful of those who are impatient to know if he has a catch.
Not yet. I just threw it in the water. Do you think you can throw a trap and immediately catch a fish?
Shentsov has his own ideas about what attracts the fish to the hook. In his case, it's a bloodworm. Not just any worm, Shentsov explains.
Maggot of a mosquito, red one.
People of all genders and ages participate in the festival. Guests arrive from neighboring cities, towns, and even regions to take part in the event. Altogether, there are 20 different competitions, and the anglers are promised plenty of prizes. It's a family affair for many Russians, despite the cold. Marina Archneva is here with her husband and children.
When I got my first perch by myself, I got hooked on it.
Anastasia Zelensova says,
my dad and my husband love it, so we try to fish too. Our child goes fishing with his father and grandfather, so I joined them too.
The participants are also invited to play games and attend master classes on fishing and cooking, as well as do some crafts like painting on wood. With that, we wrap up today's postcards. Your comments, suggestions, or questions are always appreciated. And you can contact us via email at postcards@cri.com.cn. For program producer Zhao Jianfu, I'm Wen Jie. See you next week.